Well, good morning to each one. Greet each one of you in the name of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, this morning. And, yes, not sure where to start here. Let's see who all is here. Brother Fletcher, if you could get Brother Isaac a mic, I might have him to pray later. So y'all see this picture here that Brother Ben so graciously drew up here. You might be wondering what it's all about. It's just a visual to help you remember something that I might refer to through the sermon every once in a while. There's this road, and there's a ditch on either side of the road. And I'd like for us to remember that. And as I talk about where I think maybe the center of the road is, I realize my perspective might not be quite right, so I welcome input from y'all if I've got it in one ditch or the other instead of in the center. And then there's something else that I'd like to put up here. Should have got Ben to do this, I think. This is something else I'd like for us to remember as we go through this message. And I will refer to it. What should we put under there? I didn't hear that, but I think that's what you said. More is caught than taught, if you can't read that. And now, I did have a little dilemma with my title. I wasn't quite sure what it's supposed to be. And I had a little problem with the word, so maybe y'all have to help me. Sometimes I find when you work through something with somebody that it sticks with you better. I'll try to not more of that picture too much. I'll see if I can reach that high. So my dilemma is this. I wasn't sure what word to use next. Let's see. I need an H here, right? Getting a little nervous here. Is that right? Old-fashioned. Now, the next word I had was ethics, and I wasn't sure. My title is Old-Fashioned Ethics That Help Us Keep Biblical Values. Now, is that, and then I thought, well, maybe it should be Old-Fashioned Values That Help Us Keep Biblical Ethics. I'm not quite smart enough to know how that should be, so if you'll put the right word in there in your mind, well, maybe it will be all right. And maybe neither one of them should be there. Maybe the sound guys can consult with Rich or one of the Zimmerman brothers how that should be worded. Okay, that's a rather long thing there. But okay, why don't we rise for prayer and Brother Isaac will lead us in prayer.
Dear Father in heaven, you are the Lord of the church, the Lord of the home, the Lord of the earth. And we pray that you would give Brother Allen confidence and courage and anointing of your Holy Spirit to preach this very important message. I pray you help us to receive it. I pray you help us, if we have not learned some of these values ourselves, to learn them, Lord, that they could become a part of our lives and that we could teach them to our children. Lord, I pray that this would be a congregation that would always embrace a biblical way of practicing Christianity. In Jesus' name, amen.
And thank you, brother. You may be seated. Well, Brother Rufus, thank you for that word. And one of the last things you said there is certainly what I want to do today is trust in the Lord to supply what is needed here. Now, Brother Levi doesn't like disclaimers, we found out, and I think he might not be here today. So I'll maybe not say less than half of what I should say in, as far as disclaimers go. So like I said, there's a ditch on either side of the road most often, and maybe my perspective isn't quite in the center like I'm hoping it would be. Brother Joe Tindall, a lot of you know Brother Joe Tindall, right? My son Elam made this observation, that Brother Joe Tindall preaches in organized ramblings. Now, he was not making fun of Brother Joe Tindall. He loved it. He liked it. Brother Joe Tindall preaches with organized ramblings. Well, they say to be forewarned is to be forearmed, and today I'm afraid it might be disorganized ramblings. But I'm sure the Lord, if there's something in here that we need, you need, I need, that the Lord can get something out of that. And the next thing is, this might seem very disconnected, and when we were down in Bolivia, Brother Andy Dutter was there, and he preached a message for us through Brother Nicholas as an interpreter, and he said that he felt like he had to preach in kindergarten level to work out through the interpreter there. And I said that to say this. Today, I think we're going to have a children's lesson up here. And it might be on a kindergarten level, but I do think there are some things in here that God can, as I said before, help us to glean something from it. Hopefully there's one little simple thing here that you can latch on to and get some good out of it. So I think that's that. So as we look at this subject, old-fashioned ethics that help us keep biblical values, if that is a proper way of saying it, we must acknowledge and admit that to keep these biblical values requires some discipline on our part. Can we see that? I think we all would say that is true. It takes some discipline to keep these biblical values. And the idea behind this message is that some old-fashioned secular, if you will, ethics will help us to better live out these biblical values. So let's turn to Genesis chapter 3 and verse 19. Well, I might read 17 through 19. So Genesis 3, verse 17. And unto Adam he said, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife, and hast eaten of the tree which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it, cursed is the ground for thy sake. In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee, and thou shalt eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of thy face thou shalt thou eat thy bread till thou return unto the ground. For out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust thou shalt return. So you knew I was going to go to this place. We'll just go to it first. In the sweat of thy face, work, labor. And I think if we had to stick to just one thing today, this one right here would be maybe the biggest one. Just some good old-fashioned work. This is one that will probably help us more in other areas of our life than any of the others. And if we can get this one, the others will be easier. We can learn to stick with it through the thick and the thin, when it's hot and when it's cold and when it's hard or easy. We are well on our way to be able to face anything. So yes, I do want to refer us to Ben's drawing here. There's a ditch on both sides of the road, as we can see. And thinking about work, we can get so caught up in our work that we neglect the more important things of more important things, like a Martha Mary case. But then if we veer to the other side of the road, we can get into the other ditch of no work. And I fear that we, and maybe especially our children, are no better off in that one than in the first one. It might be worse, actually, and won't be equipped to handle the disciplines required for a biblical life. If you never had to say no to your body's complaining, with those of us that do some work, know that if you work real hard, your body starts complaining. It doesn't like it. And if we never had to do that, it's going to be very hard to crucify self. What we need in crucifying self in a biblical, keeping biblical values. So it's good for our children to learn to work, and ideally at a fairly young age they can learn to do simple chores and do them well, not just haphazardly and sloppily. I passed by Mervyn Hoover's place, dairy farm down there, fairly often, and I see the children out early doing chores. And I think about how ideal that situation is. What an ideal training ground that is. And I know that I don't think any of us here have a dairy farm. We don't have that. But if we do the best we can in our circumstances, our children should still be able to learn how to work. I rejoice when I see our grandchildren being taught how to clear the table after meals, to put a pamper in the trash can, put their toys away before they go home, or after they're done playing, learning to be responsible for their things, and as they grow older, helping with more things. They were out there just a couple weeks ago, they were out there helping us pick potatoes, and they pick up potatoes, and they stayed there till we were done. I don't think they complained too much. And it was fairly warm when we were doing it. So all that is excellent training, teaching them to do the things they'd rather not. And I can assure you that they don't just automatically want to do this work. They have to be trained and taught. Just on a little note, side note here, it's rather interesting how work has changed in the last several hundred years. Most of the things today are done with machinery, things that used to be done with manual labor. And seems like people are getting weaker. They tell me that years ago, a bag of a feed used to weigh 200 pounds. And now, we still have some 100-pound bags, some that weigh that much, but most of them are just 50 pounds, or some just even 25. That's just one-fourth of what they used to weigh. Thankfully, some things still require some manual labor. Let's not shy away from doing some of that. It's good for us, and it keeps us healthier if we have to work. Okay, so the next thing we'd like to look at is respect. Something that's good to instill in your children, and when I say your, I include myself. If I say you and yours, I'm included there as well. It's respect. Respect for those in authority, elders, parents, maybe civil authorities. Respect for the aged or elderly. And even respect for things. We'll touch a little more on that later. But let's remember that more is caught than taught. And if you're trying to teach your children respect, but you chafe under the authorities that are in your life, they won't get it. Your actions will speak louder than your words. You might think you're keeping your struggle with your authorities hidden from them, but they will sense it and will follow your example rather than your teaching. I'm sorry, but that's just how it works. So respect for the elderly, the aged. Let's look at what God says about that. And we have one little verse here in Leviticus. It's chapter 19. It's verse 32. Leviticus 19, verse 32, it says, thinking about respect, thou shalt rise up before the hoary head and honor the face of the old man and fear thy God, I am the Lord. So this whole chapter, God is giving instruction from different things. And at the end of each one, said, I am the Lord your God, reminding us we do these things because of God and because it's His will. And he saw fit to include this verse. Thou shalt rise up before the hoary head and honor the face of the old man and fear thy God. I am the Lord. I've not been in this situation, but I think, if I'm correct, in the courtroom in our country, if when the judge comes in, everybody stands up, showing respect. And here God is telling us to respect the elderly, the aged, to rise up in respect. That could include opening the door for them. If we see somebody old coming, maybe you could practice some Brother Leroy. He's getting pretty old. Sister Edna, I don't think Cindy might not be here today, but yes, pick out some old people and practice on them. Giving up your chair. If you're sitting down and an older person comes in and you see there's not a chair for them, get up and give them your chair. I think of our camp outs. Sometimes we have circles of chairs down there and they're all filled up. Sometimes by some of the real younger ones. Maybe we lack a little bit in this training and some of the older ones need to stand. Helping them downstairs, opening doors. In short, helping them in any way we can. Honoring them. Thinking about honoring older people, the Mennonite church where I grew up in has different communities in different places, Pennsylvania and Missouri and Indiana and Canada. And I remember up there on Brother Norman's place, we had some visitors from Canada. And it seemed to me like they must have had an emphasis on this because I hadn't seen it in the different places, except maybe Indiana had some more of it. But they were there visiting Grandpa Colt, my wife's grandpa. And there were maybe five or six young men. They were just young. They might have been married. I'm not sure. But I still have the picture of them. They were sitting on the front porch. And they were gathered around him. They were giving him, Grandpa, their full attention, asking questions. They were listening to him. And I think they were honoring him, respecting him. So I think that's a good thing we could try to teach our children. And again, I'm sorry, but more is caught than taught. If we don't practice it, they probably won't catch it. So I think maybe there's a nursing home tonight. I think that would be a good place to practice it. Okay. This world is fast losing respect for the elderly people, it seems. The young ones are the ones that are held up and looked up, and even some children's books, note this, are slanted to make fun of the older generation. I don't know if you've seen this or not, but it depicts them as being foolish, getting into all sorts of trouble, and then the young guy has to come along and bail them out. And let's not think that our children's minds won't be affected by a diet like that. I think we'd be better off getting rid of a book like that if we have one of those. Courtesy is, I think, is a part of respect. Teach your children, please, thank you, I'm sorry, excuse me. And again, teach them by example. More is caught than taught. I think Brother Dine had a children's lesson. Does somebody remember that? Years ago with his dad, some older people maybe, I forget exactly how it all was, but he was teaching respect for the older generation. I'm not sure if Dine is here or not, but I still remember that. It was a good lesson. Okay, so Ephesians 6:2 says, honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise. And it seems to me like respect and honor go hand in hand. I don't think you can separate the two very far. I'm not sure if you can truly have the one without the other. And here's a command from God. Let's help our children to walk in that of honoring the parents, or their parents. And something else that I've seen and blessed by watching our grandchildren being taught to consider the other, to have respect for what the other wants instead of what they want. And I can assure you that this is a tough one. They don't just naturally do that. The flesh doesn't want to give up what it wants, but with persistence it can be done. And I don't know how many of you were here for Brother Norman's message, but I would like to underline that message, the atmosphere in the home, with this testimony. He preached a real good message on the atmosphere in the home, and if you don't know him, you might think, well, he's got it all up here, but he might not live it out. But my wife has done a lot of babysitting over the years, and she has kept those girls a fair bit, fairly often. And we were amazed at how they looked out for each other, preferring the other above themselves, freely sharing the things that they had. We hadn't experienced that in our family, and we were amazed at how well those girls did that. Now, we didn't keep Ryan much. I'm not sure, he might have been different. But maybe those girls didn't have this selfish nature that is so prevalent in most people. But I'm going to guess that they probably have some of that. And there was probably some intentional training involved, some example being lived out that helped those girls live like that. Yes, more is caught than taught. I might be seeing that backwards if I ain't careful. So the next we'd like to look at kindness. And maybe you cooks want to go and turn the burners up on high. We might not be real late today. So, kindness. I'm not sure if this qualifies for an old-fashioned ethic or not. People have been pretty cruel clear back to Cain. But it is a biblical concept, and we would do well to teach it to our children. After all, God is kind. We sang about God this morning and His goodness and all that. And I say amen to that. So kindness. Turn to Proverbs 12, chapter 12, and verse 10. So Proverbs chapter 12, verse 10 says, "A righteous man regardeth the life of his beast, but the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel." So yeah, a righteous man regardeth the life of his beast. Back in the day, and I've experienced some of this, farm work was done with horses, with oxen, donkeys, camels, whatever, animals. And God is saying a righteous man regards the life of his beast. And in other words, he takes care of his beast. He feeds it well. He doesn't work it too hard. He's not cruel to it. He doesn't mistreat his beast. He tries to be kind to it. And years ago, we had a cow that very obviously had not been treated like that. And it must have been a man. She must have been severely mistreated by a man because she was deathly scared of men. And Mary Ann could milk this cow, but she was scared of me. So one time Mary Ann was out there milking the cow, and some of you know how our barn looks. And she was sitting there. She hadn't tied her up because the cow was a little skittish, but she would stand and eat while she was milking her. And she was sitting there milking her, and a van driver, back then we didn't drive ourselves, and we had a van driver that took us places, and I don't know what he was doing there, but he came in the barn looking for me, and he walked right up to this cow. Like there was an alleyway, and the cow was facing the alleyway, and he walked right up to the cow, Mary Ann was milking the cow, and that cow spun around and darted out of the barn, knocked Mary Ann over and the bucket over and her hurry to get away from that man. She was so scared of him. And he was very astonished and apologetic at what had happened. But cruelty to animals, that's what it can do to in an animal. And I think I could eventually milk the cow, but she was always rather skittish around here. A righteous man regards the life of his beast. Let's not be mean to animals. Okay, let's read that. Verse 11 in Proverbs 12. "He that tilleth his land shall be satisfied with bread, but he that followeth vain persons is void of understanding." Yeah. So, let's don't allow our children to be cruel to insects, to animals, to siblings. Don't allow them to slowly kill or torture even undesirable insects or marmots. And teach them to kill humanely and quickly if it's something that needs to get rid of. When you swat a fly, it's over with in an instant. There's no torching. Don't allow pulling off of wings and legs and stuff while the animal or insect is alive. It is cruel. It's not good. And we did have I knew somebody that, a child that was like that, and I couldn't figure out how could you get there? Enjoying seeing something suffer. Yeah, let's not go there. So, Andrew is not here today. Maybe I won't embarrass him by sharing this. But, I'm very blessed by his kindness to animals and also to his to people. His nephews adore him. But the other summer he was doing a lot of the field work. And one time when I went out to do some, I saw this 4-foot stake stuck in the ground at this high. I thought, what's all this? Went over there and took a look at it, and there was this wilderness right there. And he'd stuck a stake in there so we wouldn't drive over it. So that summer, we disced around that stake. We planted around that stake. And we cultivated around that stake because of that cuterness that was there. A righteous man regards the life of his feast. Too often, when I'm out disking, I just shut my eyes and my heart when I see this cuter fluttering around trying to lead me away from her nest so I don't destroy it. But Andrew had compassion on that bird and stuck in that stake. And later there were maybe 5 or 6 little killdeer babies running around because of that. Let's cultivate that in our children. Kindness. Now there might be a ditch. Thinking about this illustration here. There might be a ditch of not killing anything to the point of where varmints or whatever take over, but as a rule, I think we can pull out the stops on kindness. I'm sure glad for God's mercy endureth forever. So teach your children to be kind, to have a heart of compassion, and it really helps if you are kind. More is caught than taught. So this is still somewhat down the same line, but maybe a little different. This day and age, we don't do much work with animals. I'm not sure if anybody here still plows with a horse or uses an ox or something like that, but and what I'm about to say might be more in line with good stewardship. But I wonder if it might not be good to regard the life of our metal beasts, tractors and vehicles and whatever. Things can be used in a proper manner, as they were designed to be used, and they'll last a long time with proper maintenance. Or we can rally around and spin tires and overloading, whatever, and end up with broken equipment. And that's not good stewardship of what God entrusted us with. We need to remember it's not ours. It belongs to God. So in the respect section, I had mentioned respect for things. This is and this comes in the same thing. Don't allow your children to abuse and trash their toys. Throwing them around, just leaving them laying around anywhere out in the driveway or whatever. Teach them to put them away, play with them in a respectful manner. And they will need your help in this. They don't know what's proper or proper way to play with the toy. They don't know what harms it. But I think it'd be a good thing to teach them to be careful with their toys and not just trash, wreck them and whatever. And maybe if we had less of them and they wrecked one of their only 2 toys, they'd learn themselves. But there's always a new one to take its place, and they keep on wrecking them. Let's teach them to take care of their toys, and maybe when they're grown up, they won't be abusing equipment or vehicles or the house or whatever. It's all a part of learning to be responsible for our actions. Marianne's not here either. She left to take Grandma home from church, but I'm not sure if she saw this or if a sister Cindy told her, but Cindy was babysitting some children one time, and they started jumping on the couch, using it for a trampoline rather than eight, and Cindy told them to stop, and they said, oh, we can do this at home all the time. We can jump on the couch. And Cindy told them that, well, you can do it at home. I'm not going to stop you from doing it there, but you're not doing it here in my house. Let's teach our children to obey someone other than ourselves, and also to respect others' property. And and our own, or their own, whatever. So we'll look at routine next. Routine. I'm not sure if this can be stressed too much or not, but routine has a very stabilizing effect on your children. Bedtime, rising time, nap time, meal time. And I think you can make your life so much easier if you establish some routine that works for you, and your children will be so much more settled and content. I believe one of the big ones that is having a set time for 2 or 3 meals a day, sitting together as a family, if that's possible. Everyone doing their part to be there in time, it helps cultivate a promptness. And am I allowed here to preach something that I didn't get practiced so good? Spice your meals with chatter and visiting. That was not as it should have been in our house, and Irvin can testify to that. But I think that's a good thing. If we can sit around the table and visit and have a good time. But not everybody trying to speak louder than the other, dominating the conversation, but taking turns. And Dad and Mom, you're going to have to help with this. It's your responsibility to guide the conversation. So routine, I think there can be a ditch of too much schedule, just as there is a ditch of no schedule. Not sure if I should do this, but I have no malicious intent in it whatsoever. And I don't know how many of you this name will ring a bell with, but some of you will know this man, Jeff Keane. I didn't really know him very well, and I don't know where they are now or how it's going for them. But somehow I was under the impression that their life was scheduled out by minutes. 5 minutes for this, 10 for that, 20 for here, and maybe some 15 minutes free time. Their whole day was spent going by that clock. Well, now it's 10 after. We've got to stop this and do that. And I believe that's a ball and a chain. It's bondage, in my opinion. Now, I may be getting off the center of the road there. But I don't see how our children can prosper under such a rigid schedule. We need schedule, but in my opinion, that's getting a little in the other ditch. Maybe it wasn't as bad as I remember it being represented. And if it is, if it wasn't, Sister Edna or somebody can straighten that out for you later. But yeah, how did people make it the first 5,000 years without any clocks? It's a wonder they survived. So now, back to thinking about this conversation around the table, having a good time and talking. If you allow me just a little bit of folly like Paul did there at one point. He said it was foolishness what he was saying, but back in the day, they had this saying, children are to be seen and not heard. Now in this, our enlightened age that we're living in, we know that saying was way off. If we applied that to our children, they would be emotionally scarred for life. They need to be allowed to express who they are. And if we're in the midst of some work or conversation and a child comes up to us and wants something, or wants to tell us something, we should immediately stop and drop what we're doing and give them our undivided attention. Otherwise, they'll probably develop an inferiority complex and be scarred for life. Now, I trust that you caught on that I was speaking facetiously there. I think Brother Abner taught me that word right, facetiously. But maybe we bought into this enlightened theory more than we should have. I'm the first to admit that there's a ditch on both sides of the road here. And maybe the seeing not heard saying is a little bit extreme. But if I had to choose between the one or the other, I think I would choose the first one. I'm afraid that the second one will result in children, selfish children, demanding children, and they might well grow up to be selfish, demanding adults if it's not curbed. But thankfully, we don't have to be in the one ditch or in the other. Can't we aim for the right in the middle of the road? So for some practicals, don't allow your child to be in the one who's in control, expecting you to stop whatever you're doing and give him your instant attention. Now there's a little qualifier here, unless he's in the middle of being potty trained and needs to go right now. Then you should probably listen to him right now. But on the other hand, or in the other ditch, don't be so distracted or preoccupied that your child can't get your attention at all. I think the one's probably about as bad as the other. It could be your work, a book, your hobby, or whatever. And here again, I'd like to underline something that Brother Abner said, I guess last Sunday, about phone distractions. And maybe I'd like to add to that computer distractions. Some very real things that keep us from paying attention to our children as we should. After all, they are of inestimable worth. Now, when our fourth son was born, Aaron, he's not with us anymore, but Mary Ann had noticed children trying to get their mother's or dad's attention, and they had to get louder and louder, and it just wasn't coming through, and she decided she's going to try something different with this one. And she decided when he cries, she's going to drop what she's doing and she's going to take care of this boy. And she did that. Whenever she could. Now, obviously, she was in the middle of something, her hands in something, she couldn't do that. But she decided she's going to drop what she's doing and go and take care of this boy. And I wonder if somebody would care to venture what happened next, to say what happened next. She saw he was getting to be a very selfish, demanding baby. It did not work. That's this enlightened theory that we were just talking about a little bit earlier. But she tried it, and she can testify that did not work. She changed the way she did things after that. So just on a little bit different angle here, still sort of the same. I forget where I was, but I saw this billboard that said, "There is no app to replace your lap. Read to your child." And I put in another word for my wife here. She has read countless books to children, and she's still doing it. Bless her for it. But I hope that none of us is using an app or a computer to babysit our children so we can do other things. In other words, video entertainment. That will scar our children for life. It will. And it will give them an appetite for more and more. And the world is more than happy to provide it for them. And when they're teenagers, they might get it regardless of you trying to apply the brakes. Don't do it. Now, in this one, I'm not sure how it got in here, what it's doing here. But this is almost the next to the last one. This is on borrowing and lending. Matthew 5:42 says, "Him that would borrow of thee, turn thou not away." The other week had a children's lesson that had something in about an axe that was borrowed. So is it all right to borrow? And yes, it is. It's perfectly fine. Borrowing and lending, there has to be both, I guess. One has to lend it out and the other one's borrowing it, but it's a way to practice a little bit of community life. We don't all need to own everything, and if we can borrow from the other what we don't have, and it can be a blessing all around. The way we don't all have to go out and buy the tractor and the disc and the plow, and we can actually a baler, we can work around some of that, and there's other tools as well. But it's a blessing all around if we're careful not to abuse what we borrow. In fact, try to be extra careful with it. Try to return it in a timely manner, in a good condition, with nothing broken. And we try to teach our children by example and word that we take better care of borrowed things than we do of our own. And if it's an expensive piece of equipment and we use it a lot, it's just right and proper to pay for the wear and tear that's incurred when we use it. I think we should be careful to not borrow something just because it is better than the one we have. If we have something that can actually do the job, it might take us a little longer. Maybe we shouldn't go borrow the neighbor's better piece of equipment to do what we want to do. So yeah, last week Brother Chris told the children the story of one of the prophets that had borrowed an axe. I think it was last week. And he was cutting this tree down and the axe head fell in the water. And he was very distressed about this. He felt responsible for returning it to its owner. And Elisha helped him through in that stick or God, and they floated to the top. So we should always feel the responsibility to use borrowed things carefully, not abuse them in any way, and yeah, returning them in as good or better shape than when we got them. And I'd just like to tell a little story of something that somebody borrowed recently, and I don't think he's here today, but Brother Andrew Wickey borrowed my gooseneck trailer, and I was very happy to let him use it, and he said, "Do the brakes work?" I said, "Well, no, they don't." So he didn't say much about it. He left, and later he called me, and he said, "You know, I hit something with the trailer, and I busted one of the tires, so I put another tire on it," and he said, "I saw that one of the other tires was bald, so he put a tire on there as well." And then I didn't see this right away, but my son Laverne pointed out to me that there was a new cord on there. He fixed my trailer wiring as well. What a blessing. And then he asked me what he owed me for using it. I just knew about the tires. I sort of laughed at him. I didn't know he'd fixed the wiring as well. And, yeah, I don't know, maybe Brother Paul Martin is here, but when I've loaned him some stuff, it's come back greased, and if there was some broken spots on it, I've seen it weld already. It's what a blessing. That's how it should work. So I don't know if I should do this or not. I guess I'll risk it. Maybe God can turn it into something good if it's not good, but sometimes borrowing can be a little questionable. I'm going to use Brother Andrew's business as an example. This has nothing to do with him. I'm just using him for an example. But say you want to build a fence, but you have more time than money and want to do all the work yourself. so you don't have to pay for Brother Andrew's well-paid workers. So some Saturday you ask Brother Andrew if you can use his equipment to build this fence, and Brother Andrew graciously lets you do it. He understands, it's all right. After all, they weren't using it on Saturday. So that was fine. Just remember to take good care of it. Don't abuse it, and make sure it goes back with the fuel tank fuller than it was when it came, and pay him for using it if you use it a lot. And if anything breaks, fix it. So that was fine. Now we have a little different scenario. Last Saturday, it went so well when you built that fence. After all, Brother Andrew keeps his equipment in top condition, and you saved a lot of money doing it. And your neighbor comes over and sees this fence, and you told him you built it, and he'd like for you to build him a fence. He does. It's a bigger project, but he doesn't mind if it takes a while. So you plan to borrow Brother Andrew's equipment for the next 2 months, just on Saturdays when he's not using it, and build your neighbor a fence. It'll be cheaper for him, and he'll pay you a decent wage for doing it. And wait a minute, it's starting to break down now. Questionable borrowing. Do you see what I'm getting at? It should be as plain as this picture that Ben drew for us. I don't think it's right. I'll just come out and say it. I don't think it's right. Maybe some circumstances it's fine. But to borrow somebody's business equipment, who's using it to make a living, to borrow it and use it to try to earn some money, rather refer this neighbor to Brother Andrew and let Zimmerman Fencing build it. After all, they're the ones paying for the equipment, the upkeep, and all that. Beware of trying to save or make money at the expense of someone else. And this, if it's a rental deal, that's perfectly fine. That's a little different than just borrowing. So, I know we're all happy to loan out equipment and things, but yeah, somehow this has a different feel to it. All right, I've just got a few bits and pieces. It's taking longer than I thought it would. So bits and pieces. Let's help our children to be responsible for their actions. I guess I sort of touched on that a little bit already. Fix your own mistakes. Urban gets tired of hearing this, but when I started making the boys more responsible to fix the things that got broken, things didn't break quite as often. Make your children and yourself responsible for your actions and fixing your own mistakes. I don't realize little children can't, but it's good training. Help your children to be trustworthy. Back in the old days, they talked about as good as his word. Made large business deals were sealed just with a handshake. There wasn't this lengthy contract that was written up and then still probably breached. It was trustworthy. Let's help our children to be trustworthy. Help your children and yourself to be good stewards, good stewardships. Thinking about just one little simple thing, Brother Mark has preached on this already or had a little demonstration, but we're going to have a fellowship meal here in a little bit. Clean up your plate. Don't throw half of it in the trash can, half of your food in the trash can. That's wasteful. And maybe the parents need to be careful how much they dish out on the children's plate. Teach your children to do their work well. I sort of touched on that. And maybe to have them do it over if it's done sloppily. And here the same thing, teach your children to put their toys and things away. Teach our children to be prompt. Prompt in obedience, in work, and whatever. Not dallying around once they're told to do something, or if they know they're supposed to be somewhere at a certain time. try to do that. And the last one here, teach your children to have reverence in the church. Brother Andrew Abner has time and again mentioned one simple thing, closing your eyes when we're praying. Try to require your children to close their eyes and just have a reverent atmosphere in the church. I don't know how many of you all read the Laura Ingalls Wilder's books. How many read those? Two people? And there was one of those books that was called Farmer Boy. It was about a man's own and his brothers. And just thinking about reverence. And there was a story in there of a Sunday afternoon. The boys were sitting there in the living room, I think. And they were supposed to be studying their, I can't pronounce the word, but their lesson. And Dad or Grandpa, I forget which one it was sitting there in the chair and he was sleeping. I think some of us older men know how that goes. But they were supposed to be sitting there reverent in the afternoon on Sunday. And they had just built a sled the evening before. They'd got it done, but they hadn't got time to use it. And it had, I'm not sure if it had snowed that night or what, but they were sitting there supposed to be reverent, studying their lesson. And their dad was sleeping, or grandpa, whoever it was. They looked at each other. I think there was three of them. They all got up and went out. And they got that sled and they went to the top of the hill. And down they went. This was great fun. But be sure your sin will find you out. Those of you that know the story know what happened next. There was a pig going from somewhere to the barn or the house or somewhere, and the sled came down the hill and scooped up that pig and went squealing right past the house. Well, that woke Dad or Grandpa up, whoever it was, and he came out. He saw that sled going down the hill with that pig squealing, and he didn't say anything. He went back in. The boys got to the bottom of the hill very sober. They got the pig off of there and put the sled away and went back in and sat down. But the next day, they got their just dues there. Thinking about reverence, that might have been a little bit out of kilter there. Not sure how everything was there, but there's also the ditch of not having enough reverence. Okay. I'm going to close with an unrelated thing here. I mentioned it before, but I will again. And that is, each time I'm up here, I come up here, I think about the judgment day. I was supposed to preach here last Sunday, and for scheduling reasons, Abner did it. And I guess maybe my wife isn't here to testify, but maybe I tend to put things off too long, I'm not sure. But studying for this message, I had started last week before I knew that it was scheduled for this week. I had started on it, and then when I found out on Monday evening that Abner's doing it, it just sort of slid right off the back, and that whole week I didn't do much at all. I thought about it a little, but I didn't do much in it. And so this week I was busy up till, well, Thursday, I guess, and then I really got serious about it. But the reason I'm saying this is Judgment Day is going to come. If there's people in here that aren't ready to meet the Lord, that day is going to come. And with this message here, it's a pretty simple thing. Actually, it's almost over. I'm getting ready to take my seat. But with Judgment Day, if you miss that day and you're not ready to meet the Lord and He comes back, it won't just be going down and taking my seat. It's going to be for eternity. So please do business with God today. Thank you all. Lord bless you.